Hello and welcome back to the Verified Geek podcast. Welcome to part two of Nikos Markou, talent consultant for EY. He will continue to talk to us about recruitment and talent acquisition. Part one, what are the soft skills to prioritize before hiring? What does a recruitment consultant actually do? And what makes a successful CV? This is now part two. We'll speak about things like what should companies do to keep their employees happy? Why do people leave their jobs? And what makes a successful leader? Let's hear it. That's very valuable information. Yeah, I completely agree with you. So back to what you're doing now, you know, leaving recruitment. What do you think that companies should do to keep their employees happy? In order for them not to like, because it's so easy to like leave a job now that the good employees do it very easily. So what do you think they should do to keep them happy?
Well, look, I mean, I think, you know, just to address the first thing that you said, you know, it really is, it's very easy to leave a job right now just because it's, you know, there's not three job sites that you can search for. There's hundreds of job sites, right? And also, like, you know, there's the, you know, Glassdoor that kind of has like Glassdoor and Fishbowl, which are like, you know, they're sites and apps that kind of give you a little bit more insight of what's going on inside the companies that you're applying for. So it really has become much more easier to apply for jobs. But also, if you, because a lot of people are working from home now, they also have more time to really invest in their own personal development and retool their skill sets to apply for different jobs that they wouldn't be able to maybe 2 years ago. So I think that's what kind of like comes into play. But I think what really matters to people and like how you can kind of like keep good employees within a company is a variety of things. And it's not one size fits all. I can't say, oh, you need to do X, Y, and Z, and that's it. Because what is ideal for me and what is ideal for you are completely different things, right? You know, you have to take a look at your workforce and you're not, understand that, hey, you're not going to keep everyone happy, but what are like some key strategic initiatives that you can do that can kind of address a lot of these groups, right?
Yeah.
It could be, for example, all right, well, what is our remote work policy? Is it everybody needs to be in the office? But then you need to pause and say, well, do they really need to be in the office? Like it's we did it for a year. Why are we in a hurry to get everybody back to work into the offices, right? Because we're afraid that our culture is going to take a ding, right? Well, if you have a people culture, you should be able to manage that and work through it so that your solutions work for your people. Second, okay, well, all right, well, is it, are we better off with a hybrid model where people need to come in at some point, build relationships, you know, really, really matter and everything, and basically they can adapt it accordingly. Me, I like going into the office. I love going into the office, but I don't love always needing to come to the office. Like I love having that flexibility of, well, this morning I woke up and I feel like I want to wear a shirt and I want to commute to New York City and buy a $6 coffee and buy a $40 lunch. But then there's days where I feel like, okay, well, I want to wear sweatpants and sit at home and drink my own coffee. And I also maybe want to pick up my daughter a little bit earlier and not waste that 1 hour that I would commute. It's really just about giving employees more choice. And that freedom of giving them more choice can really add to people's engagement. The other thing is people's lives have been completely uprooted. And even if you know, you've transitioned from a completely like in-office environment to a virtual environment, and people have more flexibility than did before. That doesn't mean that they have it in every part of their lives, right? They're the people that they live with, the partners that they have. What's their situation's been like, right? What is, you know, what's their living situation, right? So if they need, if people need to be, could be at home, and their home is, they live in New York City or in London, and they have three roommates, and their three roommates are also working from home. Yeah, it's their needs are going to be different. So why not cater all across it, right? Really, and some people are going through a very difficult time mentally, right? And you know, there's all these statistics out there, like one in four people are undergoing through some form of like mental health issue, right? Whether it's depression, whether it's anxiety, you know, so you really need to offer those types of programs that really help people. And it could be something as a reasonable accommodation about like flexibility, or, you know, being able to go see, see professionals during like, during working, regular working hours, or it could be having, instead of like spending thousands and thousands of dollars or British pounds on kind of like all these internal initiatives that don't matter anymore, like M&Ms, like free M&Ms for the entire office or something like that. You know what? Spend your money as an organization to have a free mental health service to your employees. So at any moment, if they're undergoing through anything, they have somebody to talk to. And or, you know what, you know, or and also have your HR team train these, your managers and your leaders inside the company, to identify when people are not feeling like they're okay, and what you can do to kind of like remedy or offer solutions in a timely manner. Because again, if people are burnt out and they're already like at the point where they're at the point of quitting, or they're like already exhausted, you're already kind of late. So you really need to know when to step in as an organization and as an employer to help your people, right? And sometimes you can't wait when they raise their hand. You need to kind of like figure that out accordingly. So I think just to just close the loop on your question, for you to really make your employees want to stay in a time when there's so many opportunities, and there's also this fear of missing out, like I'm going to get FOMO if I don't leave now, or you know, I'm going to regret it in 2 years. Look, you know, just remind your employees, look, everything is negotiable. In the same way you go to a prospective employer and they promise you everything, and it could be like, you know, all lies, right? And you negotiate. Here we see your value. So let's negotiate together. What do you want? What do you need to make this place a better place for employment? Is it flexibility? Is it more money? If it's flexibility, okay, what can we do to work out? Is it the type of work you're doing? Let's do that. If it's your compensation, all right, well, what's your request? What is it reasonable? Okay, well, we can't give you all this money right now, but we could work something out over the next year or two. Sometimes people leave for the wildest reasons, and they feel more comfortable to have those conversations with a recruiter that doesn't care.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
And somebody who's, you know, and they don't feel like they can have that conversation somebody worked with for 5 years.
Yeah, that's true. Because the recruiter sounds like they care. They don't really. They just want the money, but they're there.
There's good people out there. Yeah. There's good people out there. I don't want to like.
Yeah, that's true. I think we're kind of bashing the recruiters here. That was not the point of the podcast. Yeah. I certainly had very good experiences with recruiters that
exactly.
I even went out for drinks with them after getting the job. And then I went again because we had so much fun. But you're right. Respect is a very big thing. Like if I didn't get the job, tell me why I didn't. Because
to the best of your abilities, you know, to the best of your abilities, like I know, like, you know, I would like to know some constructive feedback that would help me. Right. And if you're most likely, if you have, you know, like if you're a professional in operation and you're an external recruiter, all right, you send feedback form to the client, whether they want to proceed with a candidate or not. There's something in the, there's might be things that you can't share, but what can you share kind of thing. Yeah, and exactly. So I think it's really about that. And just, I guess, you know, as somebody that was a former recruiter, I interviewed with somebody that was interviewing a recruiter that was interviewing for a role with a company. And they liked me so much, they offered me a job to work with them. So, you know, it really is, you know, you meet some really good people, because for you to gravitate towards that role, I feel like you really need to be a people person. And a people person is like something that sounds like it's not authentic and truthful. But I think you really need to be one of those types of people that interacts with people and gains energy from it. That's what I think. A people
I think
person.
That's why you're so good at your job, because you're a people's person and you.
Well, I think I'm good at my job, but you know.
Yeah. I think you are. I think you are.
Yeah, I feed off people's energy, and I think you know it's important if you're dealing with that type of environment. And, you know, you do that, right? Because in the end, you know, sometimes you know people have stuff that's going on in their lives, and when. At least when they're interacting with people on a working basis, they want to deal with people that are, you know, kind of giving them some positive energy. So they feel like, you know, they can gain energy from, because it is very infectious, right? It is contagious. Yeah, I find that. And I'm reading this book right now, and it's very, very interesting. And it's called Never Split the Difference. And it's about this guy that was a hostage negotiator for the FBI, Chris something, right? And he spent years, and he went to Harvard, and he worked for the FBI, and he talks about all these cases. And one of the things that he kind of tells you when you're kind of negotiating with all these, like, with terrorists and kidnappers and everything, he's like, one of the things you need to be doing is, even if you're, like, on the phone and they can't see you, smile. Because it puts people at ease, and they can actually sense when you're smiling, even if they can't see you.
That's that. Yeah, I'm going to take that on board in my everyday everyday life, because I find it really difficult. You know, working from home, we don't even have our cameras on anymore. Mm. And even though I know some of them because I've worked with them in person, I find it like really, you know. There's many occasions where we misinterpret things and we end up, you know, having arguments. Mm-hmm. Whereas if we were in the office, we wouldn't. It's basically the way when you're typing, the other person doesn't understand how exactly you're asking the question, or you reply to a question. It's just text that you see. So there's so many arguments that started because of like this. So I like you said before, every employee has different needs. That's so important, because I'm a software engineer. There's other software engineers. You'd think, right? You'd think that, okay, they're all software engineers. They have the same needs. No, it comes down to the person. Like most of my, in fact, I'll tell you something that kind of shocked me, right? When they asked us, do you want to come back to the office? I was like, yes, finally. You know, most of them will say, yes, let's go back to the office. At least, like, and we did, you know, the poll thing, the survey thing. And it's like 80%, no, you don't want to go back to the office. And I was shocked. I was like, what? We are literally looking at four walls every day. Are you crazy? And then I realized we're so different. No, it doesn't matter that we do the same job. It doesn't mean that we have the same needs. It's down to the person, isn't it?
Well, to add on to that, right? Like I get, like I've done interviews before, and every time people ask me, what's the future of HR, right? And I think like you kind of captured it, right? Like everybody, there's no one size fits all. So there's always like different things that you have to do for different employees and based on their needs and wants and what makes them thrive, right? Yeah. And it kind of brings me back to like, okay, well, you know, I feel because of that, because you have to customize the experience for all these different people, I feel like HR will always be around and always be needed. And I've gone through at least at work, and I know that a lot of talent professionals can feel the same, where we've gone through different HR transformation projects, different times where we've kind of automated things, we've updated our technology, so it's more self-service. So if you need something, just go to a site, the link is there, it's pretty simple, versus maybe a decade ago when I started, where everything was hands-on. Right.
Yeah.
Now it's like, okay, well, we have all these automations, we have bots to answer questions, right? And the technology is just improving, right? But I feel like if you take a look at like what the future of technology of HR is, right? Am I worried about not having a job? No, because I think technology will eventually take away a lot of my transactional stuff that I need to do on a day-to-day basis, like answering questions, navigating people around policies, and making sure that they're aware of what kind of tools and resources are available to them at a company. But I feel like it's the same way where, you know, maybe people felt nervous when in the 70s when you worked in a bank, and then they introduced ATM machines, cash machines, and people were like, oh, well, what's going to happen to our jobs? Well, quite to the contrary, we see that there's still such a growing demand for bank tellers and everything, because yes, in the end, people want to be heard. And it's not, the job isn't like, okay, here's my card, I want money. There's more different things and more complex things. And it's different for every customer that walks in there. And you got to look at your employees as your customer, right? Yeah, you have your clients, right, that you need to deliver on. But you have to look at, okay, well, you have to apply that same philosophy to your employees. Because in the end, if the market continues to be as good as it is right now for a very, very long time, you know, employees will constantly have choices.
Yeah.
So, and what may make sense to them now as a single person may not make sense to them in 2 years when they're married and they have kids, right? Or yeah, going through different stages in their lives, or maybe their kids are like grown up, or maybe they don't have kids and they want more flexibility to travel to work from any place on earth, right? You really need to customize and have those options. Be flexible if you really want to win on the war on talent.
Yeah, very, very valuable information again. So going back to what you said about leadership,
How
has leadership evolved? What skills do you need now to be a good leader?
Well,
and what are the expectations of the company? What does a company expect from a leader? Like,
well, I think, being a leader is something now is different than it was maybe like 5 years ago or 10 years ago. I think one of the key things you need to have, like, I don't think in any business school 10 years ago, they were saying, okay, well, if you want to be successful at leading teams, you need to practice empathy, right? You know, and obviously empathy is different than sympathy, right? And I think, you know, maybe like 5-10 years ago, the majority of business students probably couldn't be able to distinguish the twos, right? The two.
Yeah.
But you really need to be empathetic, because people are going through different things, and you really need to kind of like know how to apply empathy where it's needed, right? And there's two main areas that you can demonstrate empathy as a leader. First, you know, you can consider somebody's thoughts through cognitive empathy, right? Like, well, if I was in this person's position, what would I be thinking right now? What would I want right now, right?
Yeah.
That's cognitive empathy, right? But you can also focus on a person's feelings using emotional empathy, right? Like, well, being in this person's position, this would make me feel this way. So it really is about like working between those two quadrants, right? And, you know, really, you know, inquiring about the challenges directly, and then listen to the employees' responses, right? Because in the end, people want to feel like they're heard, they're understood. So I think that goes a long way. And also for people to understand that, look, you're a manager, you're a supervisor, the same way you look up to the leadership team in the company, there's somebody always looking up to you. And you probably have a more direct influence. And that's where the skill of self-awareness, right? Self-awareness comes into play of like how somebody's emotional well-being at work is, how their belonging feeling that is, right? You know, you have a massive impact, right? And if you have a really good working culture, it's not about being in the office. It really is about let's take care of each other, right? Yeah. That's what being a good leader is. That's what a team player is. Let's take care of each other so we can, one, drive results, and two, be okay at work, right? Because it is a long time, and being on the clock is so fluid now, right? It's different, right? So it really is about having, you know, resiliency, because again, we kickstarted change, right? That's just going to be unprecedented. And these words, we keep hearing them over and over again, but it doesn't underplay the situation. We are in a very exciting time where change is going to be so rapid. A lot of careers are going to be built, right? There's going to be people that are going to be like, okay, this is my opportunity to really stand out. And this is my opportunity to stand out within my team, within my company, out in the marketplace. This is our opportunity as a team to really stand out across the organization because there's opportunities. But there's also people that are going to be like, oh, I'm like exhausted. So, and I'm tired of this change. And I kind of wish, you know, and you really have to have that growth mindset and resiliency to get through it. So that's how I see leadership evolving. Yeah. It's all these new concepts that we're hearing them over and over again now, but they still are very, very new and we still really need to build onto them.
Yeah. That makes total sense. About leadership though, well, what I have experienced is exactly like you said, because in tech specifically, obviously you have to have some skills that are good for the job. If you're a programmer, you have to like be good at programming or like, you know, be passionate about it or something. But I've realized now that being a really good programmer or really good in technical skills, but also being a leader at the same time, it's very difficult. You know, most people just have one or the other. and it's not just about leadership. It's about like being a good manager. If you are an amazing programmer or like an amazing employee in your technical skills, doesn't necessarily make you a great manager. These things are very different. And to be fair, I've noticed the opposite. Like if you're really, really good at your technical skills, then you're kind of lacking in your managerial skills. Or if you're really good at your managerial skills, you kind of lack. Okay. What I've noticed is it's kind of rare to have both skills because but I think, like you said, it's evolving, you know. People are now realizing, oh,
it's a must. Really... It's not a nice to have. It's a must.
It's a must. Yeah. So, and I'm applying this for myself, right? Because I'm now a senior developer and I'm leading a team, or I'm not leading a team, but I'm leading the parts of the project some weeks. And I'm realizing that, this junior person doesn't really understand this. I shouldn't really be mad at them. I have to like be just sit down, talk to them, even if it takes a lot of time, a lot of my time. It's kind of important to be nice to them and be like,
but that's also part of your job, though. That's I think the transition, we all struggle with it. I feel because again, when you first starting out your career, say in like the first like 5 years of you starting out your career post university or like when you start your career into something, right? what you're really truly like value, like assessed on is like your contribution as, okay, how much output you have. And then people that are highly skilled, right, often may not have the people skills, but because they're so good technically, they find themselves
in big in high positions. Yeah.
Yeah. In these managerial positions where people are looking up to them for answers and they're just terrible at managing people for the first 5 years of their career, right? Nobody sat with them and said, all right, well, look, if you want to progress in your career, it's about how important it is you're developing other people, right? And usually, like, you have high performers and in a lot of industries, right, where they like thought of themselves and like, you know, they were like, or they were so goal oriented, right, that, okay, well, you give me this project, I'll complete it. And that's how they became successful. But as you, when you become a manager, you need to transition and switch out of that mode and be like, okay, well, one, if you're planning on doing everything by yourself and you're goal oriented and you're going to pull through, you're going to be successful to an extent until you burn out or fail. Right. Yeah. And if you really want to progress in your career and meet targets that you've never met before and exceed them, you really need to get people on the expected level. And that involves being patient, that involves putting time. The other thing is, you got to understand, you know, people are that are reporting up to you, they might be starting their careers in a different environment than you, right? Maybe you're good and you were a hot shot from day one because somebody took you out for lunch on your first day. You didn't spend 2 years on your couch, you know, trying to figure things out in a completely virtual environment while, you know, the whole world is like burning around you. So you really need to tap into those resources. And, you know, there's, I love, you know, I work out a lot and I love, and I love, like, I have a Peloton and I do that every day. And they have a saying, and I'm not just saying it because I'm part of that, you know, like, because I'm part of like the Peloton crew, right? No. It says, you know, hold on, I'm going to mess this up, but it's something along the lines of like, together we go far kind of thing, right? And that it really is all about like, you're going to get further if you're with other people, you know, it just really is, you know. So, you know, what I would say is, you know, learn to transition to that point because you're limiting the scope of your ability to move up the ladder if you don't early on in your career, you don't start recognizing, you know, okay, it's easy to recognize what you're good at and double down on, right?
Yeah.
It's very easy. It's very easy to it's a little bit more challenging to understand what you're not good at and work on it.
Exactly.
But it's a skill to look at people in your team and say, all right, well, this person's really good at this. I should help them work on this. And I need to work out a plan with them so they thrive in that. And if they're not good at this area, what can I do to help them? That is a skill. And I think you need to see that as if you're a leader, your manager, your supervisor, that's a skill you need to learn.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I 100% agree with you. And I am starting to realize this now because I didn't know the points where I was weak at. And it takes time. It takes time, but you'll get there and then you'll have the ability to just fix stuff and move on. However, one thing that annoys me in the whole culture of being a leader is that in order to go up now, they say to you, you have to be a leader, make your leadership skills better, do this. It's like, does everyone have to be a leader? Like, is leadership so important to everyone? You know what I mean? It's that I think it has become this thing where everyone has to become a leader, but you can't really. It's like money. Like, not everyone can be rich, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think, well, first off, I think we need to go back to what we discussed earlier, right?
Yeah.
People want different things. They want different things.
Yeah,
and
right.
Not everything is about, if you think, if you take a look back, right, look at things now anyway, right? There's no, for a lot of companies, there's no even physical office, right? A physical office. So people aren't in the mindset of, I need to get that corner office. Nobody cares, right? There's people that do care, right? They want, you know, they want that prestige, but there's people like, look, I want to just pay my bills and spend time with my family, and that's okay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but those, then there's other skills that come into play, right? You need to always make sure that, you know, you're contributing, that you're meeting expectations. And that goes back to the skills of communication, teaming, collaboration.
Yeah, exactly.
And
yeah.
Managing your, look, if flexibility is important to you, right? And work-life integration, not about work-life integration is important to you, then you need to develop that skill so you're clear on setting boundaries, because that's like something I think we didn't discuss, but definitely that's very important. And, you know, the team, you know, you need to have those communication skills to make sure, hey, so you're comfortable to say, hey, look, I'm logging off at 5 o'clock. You know, I got to go do something. And really is that's part of communication.
Yeah. That's
so, you know, everybody wants something different. And you know what? They might have like huge aspirations, but they might see, and this is the other thing that we're seeing with the gig economy, right? People are like, they're seeing their main job as something that just pays the bills, and they're doing a side gig that gives them the passion to do it. And, you know, maybe they're selling stuff on, they're selling like knitted
Amazon,
hats on Etsy or something
like
that.
Yeah,
and you know, they might make
that
like
that fulfills them even more. Yeah,
exactly. And you know, their job is like, yeah, it's there, it's just to pay the bills and the mortgage,
exactly.
And
yeah,
that's fine.
Yeah.
So I, you know, we often like, you know, when we're talking about the corporate world and technology and everything, we think, oh, it's like about progressing. But realistically speaking, not everybody's going to be the CEO. So, and that's okay. That is okay, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah. It's important that when you're at work, whether it's online or in person, you feel like you have the abilities and the capabilities to be your best authentic self. And that's what it is.
Amazing. Great. Just to end this whole conversation, tell me one thing. So just had a kid, you're exercising, and you're also working in a higher position in your company. How do you manage all these three things?
I think it's important to, you know, my partner, she also has, you know, she's an executive at her company. You know, it really is about, you know, communication, right? The same things that matter at work also matter at home. Communication, making sure that if there's like, okay, I need to have that 1 hour where I work out, right? And she needs her time as well. And it's about us working on an agreement to make sure that, you know, we both can stick to our own promises to ourselves. Like, okay, this is important to me. I need to do this. Let's work around it. So it really is about communicating with the person at home that you share your home with, about like the home expectations and being committed to it. And I think when you have a good momentum, and I think I see it with like discussions that I have with other people, where they have failed to have like a consistent routine. It really is, look, don't set crazy aspirations about working out twice a day and having six meals a day and like, you know, being up and start small. Stick to a routine. James Clear, he writes a book. He wrote a lot of books on habits, habit formation. And he has this one book called Atomic Habits. And I highly recommend that for people. It really is about habit formation, what you need to do. And part of it is just setting up a routine that you're going to be successful at, right? If you want to be healthy. Okay, well, what's a quick fix, right? Let me just not eat after 8 o'clock, right? At night, or let me just make sure that I don't have like all this crazy junk food in the house, right? Let me watch, and okay, let me go for a walk. Or if I know that the biggest issue for me, and I live in a cold climate like London or a rainy climate, right? Well, and the biggest thing that stops me from going into the gym is the cold or the rain. All right, well, what kind of exercise can you do in your house?
Yeah.
So probably really happens. Setting realistic expectations. And then from that point onwards, once you have momentum, you build on momentum, right? Because once you're, you know, exactly like I know we were discussing before the call started, we're talking about triathlons, and I know that you do a lot in triathlons, right?
Yeah.
I can't decide today, all right, you know, tomorrow I'm going to go do a triathlon, right? I'm not David Goggins, right? But you need to work your way up to it. And I think when you do that and you're kind of like, all right, you know, you feel that momentum and you get that high, and then you're either seeing changes in your everyday life. That's when you kind of like, okay, well, I can make this work.
Yeah.
And you have to see it as not a diet plan, nothing like, okay, I got to do this because I'm going to lose 20 pounds, you know, by the end of the month. That you're going to fail.
Yeah, you're going to fail. That's true.
You got to be consistent. And I think, look, I mean, health, if anything we learned from this pandemic is that health is important.
Yeah.
It is. It's important for you in your relationships. It's important for you for your job. It's important for you. So prioritize your health.
Yeah. And mental
mental health. And I think companies, and I'm hoping that if there's companies that are listening to this, that's what you need to prioritize. They need to understand that employees should prioritize that. Yeah. And you need to make the environment in such where that is a priority for people. And everything else, you know, if we create a workplace that people feel that energy, I mean, that's a competitive company. I feel like that would be especially in the war on talent.
Yeah. Perfect. Nikos, thank you so much.
Awesome.
Hopefully we'll do this again in New York face to face.
I will hold you to that.
Perfect. Thank you so much for this. It was amazing. Thank you.
Talk to you soon.
And like I always say, if you made it this far, that means that you're actually enjoying the podcast. Why don't you go and write a review for us at iTunes, Apple Podcasts. We are also on Instagram at verified_geek. And we're also on Twitter, Verified Geek, and we do have a YouTube channel, the Verified Geek channel. Thank you so much for listening. See you next week.